You know, I bet you've heard of the cloud analytics platform Snowflake, but do you know how it integrates with Kafka? Isaac Kunin, a product manager at Snowflake, is going to tell us all about that on today's episode of Streaming Audio, a podcast about Kafka, Confluent, and the cloud. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Streaming Audio. I am your host, Tim Berglund, and I'm joined today in the virtual studio with all of the social distancing you could possibly ever need by my guest, Isaac Kunin. Isaac, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tim. And I will confirm I cannot see or touch you.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't even know. Where are you located, Isaac, right now?
I'm in Seattle, sort of in the north end of Seattle. Yep.
Okay. Secure bunker, your panic room in Seattle. That's good. I am in my basement in suburban Denver, Colorado. And these things seem to be working out for the both of us.
It doesn't matter much where we are anymore.
Really doesn't. It really does. Through the magic of Zencastr and podcasting, we can make this work. Isaac, we are going to talk about Snowflake and Kafka and the integration. We're going to dig into some Kafka Connect things today. I would love, as always, to hear about you first. How did you get to do what you do? What is it that you do? And how does one get there?
Yeah, so I'm a product manager at Snowflake. I've been working in the data industry for a long time. So I started off really doing data work with SQL Server back many years ago. I was there for a few years and also worked on another data product at Microsoft called Stream Insight. Made my way through Tableau, where I built Tableau Prep, and then off to Snowflake, where I've been working on various things, mostly in the connector space. So both our Spark and Kafka connectors, and then also some extensibility work that we've got sort of in the works.
Cool. So I'm going to assume that everybody listening to this, if you want to listen to a Kafka podcast, you've heard of Snowflake, and you probably know, cloud analytics thing, right? Maybe give us something a little bit better than that. What, in your opinion, is the minimum a developer or architect should know about Snowflake to be able to think about it as a component, as a tool in the toolbox, a component in the cloud ecosystem?
Right.
So that's a very long way of asking, what's Snowflake?
What is Snowflake? Yeah. So I might give you a 3-part answer. So at the simplest, you can think of Snowflake as really almost like any other SQL data warehouse that you can connect to. So if you're used to using another data warehouse, Snowflake will look superficially very similar to you, which is great because, you know, obviously SQL has been around since, you know, prehistoric times, the 1970s. And so being able to integrate with that ecosystem is, I think, a core strength of ours.
And I might say the name evokes the classical data warehouse.
That's right. You know, I get, you know, when you say you work for Snowflake, people give you funny looks, but really from a database perspective, that's a pretty standard term. Plus our founder is very much like skiing. So I think that also fed into this.
There you go.
So that's sort of the most superficial layer, but of course we like to say that Snowflake is really the data warehouse that was built for the cloud. And so if you dig down just a little bit, you find that our architecture is really very substantially different than anything that's out there. We really enable our customers to scale their data entirely independently from their compute. And this really enables some real magic. I've worked on systems before where, you know, I could run my query before about 7 in the morning, and then I couldn't after that because other people were playing with it. But with Snowflake, I can just always spin up my own compute and be very isolated from everyone else that's doing their work. So we really scale almost infinitely on the compute side. And likewise, on the data side, we really scale very independently and very, very well. So, I mean, we have customers that have single tables that have over a petabyte of data, and that just works fine. Mm-hmm. And then maybe the third answer to that would be that we have really started to build beyond our sort of traditional data warehouse roots. And we like to talk about now being sort of the data platform for the cloud. And so we've started to really extend ourselves in terms of the kind of integrations that we do with things like Kafka, right? So people building apps can integrate with that nice streaming solution that we're here to talk about today. We have data sharing and data marketplace or sort of ways to share data both internally and externally. Lots of sort of features that are moving beyond that core data warehouse route to become a much more complete data platform.
How do people generally see the data that is in Snowflake? I realize that's well after any sort of streaming components that we're going to talk about, but what's a typical visualization front end?
Well, yeah. So, I mean, obviously the easiest way you can get at your data, maybe the most basic way you get at your data, is we have our own worksheets where you can log in and write SQL and see the results. But we have a huge array of partners, everyone from Tableau, where I used to work, that is a very common front end of products like Looker or Power BI. So all of these tools that people use to do BI or visualizations very naturally plug into Snowflake. And so you really have your choice.
Cool. So any of the, one might say, the usual suspects, including a native interface of your own.
Yeah, maybe even some less usual suspects, but
cool.
I'm not maybe the expert there, but yeah, we've got quite a number of tools that plug in and work with Snowflake.
So there's a question that's so softball, I won't even ask it. You know, why would you integrate Kafka with Snowflake? And I think we get that, right? There's data in Kafka. There's various kinds of real-time analysis that the Kafka platform is good at doing, things in Kafka streams. You can do computations in Kafka streams. You can do queries in KSQL that perform computations that you know, right? When you have worked out the query in advance and you want something to be calculating that result on a message-by-message basis, like the Kafka ecosystem understands that.
That's right.
And performs very well at that. But then when you don't know what the query is and we need to explore, by the way, you're welcome to expand on my analytics meta use case.
Yeah.
There,
no, I would
just kind of how I see things.
Yeah. So from the Snowflake perspective, streaming data is becoming certainly much more important. And we see Kafka as probably the most common, I wouldn't even say probably, it is certainly the most common streaming solution that we see. And so integrating there becomes very important for us. And of course, all the transformations along the way that you're talking about, Kafka really excels at. From Snowflake's perspective, we really, I would say, excel at, yeah, those ad hoc queries. It can queries too, that's fine. Over your huge store of that persisted data. Like I said, we have customers with single tables in the petabyte range, and we scale very well, handle that. And so it's a fairly natural, I think, marriage to say, hey, that streaming data, as it's in flight, you want to transform it, you want to extract some value, but I want to land that so I can do historical queries on it, for example. Right. And where do I land that? And where do I run those? And that's Snowflake. So it's a pretty good sort of mesh of technologies.
Got it. Tell me, so I assume the integration between Kafka and Snowflake is a Kafka Connect connector, yes?
Correct. That's right.
Nice. Nailed it. All right, good. Now, we will put a link in the show notes to some shows on Connect. We did a lot of them in the summer of 2019. I spent a lot of time just talking about Connect from various angles. So there's plenty of stuff in the back catalog. If you don't know what Connect is, but I'm going to assume that you basically do, and Isaac and I are going to talk about it. Yeah, so tell me about the process there. And I'm gonna assume you were PM of this connector and this whole interface.
Correct,
right?
Yeah.
So how did it come to be? How did you make the case? Tell us the history of the connector.
I think that one, there's not much of a story to tell. The case sort of makes itself. You have enough customers.
Why is there not a connector right now?
Yeah, why is there not a connector? How do I make this easier? We had a lot of customers that were going sort of through their own machinations to get their data from Kafka into Snowflake. The most common route would be to use an S3 connector and then trigger ingest in one of our various ways. But, there's some complexity there, especially if you want sort of reliable ingestion, exactly once delivery of your data is not the easiest thing to engineer with, Kafka and our ingestion, sort of marrying those two. And so by building the connector, we're able to provide a lot more simple way to get the data in. And that's really what our customers were looking for with this.
What was interesting about the process? Did the engineering team learn anything interesting about Connect or the interface? Were there any special challenges that came up that would be fun to talk about?
Good question. You know, I think we learned a lot about how our own ingestion story works, and so that's always interesting to sort of dog food your own interface there and figure out how to make it work. Really puts yourself in the customer's shoes, and I think we learned a lot about how, like I said, our own ingestion APIs work. As for the Connect APIs, I think it's been interesting to just sort of sort out how they work, but I don't know if there's a whole lot to say there. In some sense, they're fairly straightforward in terms of spinning up the connector, and maybe some challenges in making it work well with our situation. That is, I think the Connect framework assumes certain things about startup and shutdown that don't always hold with our ingest story. So dovetailing those two was somewhat challenging, but not rocket science, I wouldn't say.
Sure. I mean, it is ultimately, it seems like it ought to be pretty easy. And Connect is not, as APIs go, and I always tell people when I'm introducing them to Connect, like, you don't want to write S3 integration code. Okay. You just don't want to do that. You don't want to write the code that reads data from a JDBC database data source. You know, this is not why you've been brought upon this earth. That code has been written, use it. But when you do come up with an interface, that's not a connector that, you know, when you have to write a connector, it's not a bad API. You
could just, no, it's fairly straightforward. It's not much to it. There's not that much to it. Exactly.
Yeah. Which is always the thing when we talk about Connect, that it is one of those things that on the surface seems like, wouldn't you just write that code? Like, why not just write your own consumer or producer or whatever and just make that happen? It's deceptively simple, right?
Yeah, it's a little deceptively simple. Like I said, you know, I think the big challenge is in giving those guarantees about reliable ingestion. And that's not so much about the Connect API as it is about dovetailing that with the APIs that we have.
Right, right. And why that and not just JDBC? I'm assuming Snowflake is, you know, bristling with JDBC functionality on its exterior. So why not that?
Right. It's fairly typical if you look at most databases, they have their own very optimized ingestion route. Running data into a database via JDBC is pretty inefficient. And you know, particularly with Snowflake, adding single records at a time is not an efficient way to get data in today. Maybe someday, but not right now. And so we have our own bulk ingestion facility, which really lets you write a batch of records to a file store like S3, and then ingest those in a much more efficient way. So you really want to go through that, or your performance is going to be poor.
The batch. And batching... But you said some people had kind of hacked this with S3, which I assume would be a batched solution also.
That's right. And so you can do that. And in fact, that's really, at some level, what our connector does is nothing that a user can't do themselves. And so we've actually added no core Snowflake code to build the connector. It's all built using the APIs that we expose already.
Nice.
And so we have functionality, we call it Snowpipe, that lets you do what we call continuous. You should really think of as sort of ongoing batches of loading of data into Snowflake. And we do that by using S3 and then triggering these ingests through a REST API. You can also do what's called auto ingest, where you just drop files in a bucket and we will do the ingest from there.
You'll find the bucket.
But, yeah, that's right. We'll listen for notifications on the bucket and pick files up as they're dropped. But you can trigger this either that way or through a REST API, and that's what we use in the connectors, is that REST API. So yeah, I mean, before the connector, what customers would do is they would drop files in an S3 bucket and then either rely on auto ingest, which for S3 was not always reliable, but is now, right? Those notifications from S3, there were some issues there. But those have now been resolved. So it is a reliable way, at least, to pick the data up. Or they'd have to go and trigger that ingest themselves, which is programmatically sort of a pain. And then, of course, what you have to do is make sure that you monitor that ingestion and, you know, advance your offsets in Kafka correctly once things are ingested. And you have to worry about what happens if, you know, either Kafka Connect or Snowflake were to go down and come back up? And how do I make sure that my records got in? How do I make sure that they only get in once, et cetera? So there's a bunch of bookkeeping that one needs to do on both the Snowflake and the Kafka side to keep these things aligned, which is tricky. And so to be honest, I'm not sure I've ever seen a customer that really invested in getting that logic right. And so people doing this through S3 would ingest their data and it performs fine, but would generally sort of swallow the fact that the reliability of that ingest was not always perfect.
Well, you just said some really important words there that you've never seen a customer invest in getting that logic right. I might be getting that quote wrong.
That's right. And it's because it's tricky. We went into this thinking it would be easy, and it ended up taking us a bit longer than we thought it would take to get that done. And so now we've done it. The nice thing about us doing it is that now all of our customers can go and just pick this up and get that logic once rather than having to reinvent the wheel over and over.
Exactly. And that is such a great description. And this is the thing that fascinates me about Connect. I don't get the question often, but I have gotten it in the past from some what you know appear to be fairly junior developers. You know, why would I use this? Why wouldn't I just write this? And the problem is that the block diagram, like if you have to whiteboard what you're talking about to get someone to understand what you mean when the task is to get data from a Kafka topic into Snowflake, it doesn't take you a long time to draw the diagram. And it does not take you a long time to get everybody in the room to understand exactly what you mean. It's so simple. There's data in a topic and I want it to be in a table in Snowflake. Oh, okay. You know, so like the concept is there. It's not like some fiendishly complex financial payment settlement mechanism or
no, that's right.
You know, real estate transaction modeling or something that you really have to bend your mind to understand the business process. You just don't. You got some stuff here and you want to put it into that thing there. But the particulars of it are really hard.
That's right. And when you start asking questions like I said, what happens if Kafka goes down or Kafka Connect goes down or Snowflake errors out or there was an error in the data? What do I do with that if I don't want to lose it? Or how do I scale this? Right? All of these questions start to complicate the picture. And I think we've got a fairly good sort of answer to all of these with the connector, but it isn't trivial. Some developers might sit there and say, yeah, can I just build this? And of course the answer is yes. But I can't remember the exact quote here, but what is it? Good developers borrow and great developers steal.
Yeah.
And here we're saying, please steal the whole thing.
And even better developers, you know, just figure out a way not to write the code. But yeah,
that's right.
And this is a case for stealing where it's or using the dang component, because actually getting all that stuff right, like you said, offsets and failure modes and all those cases, that's hard to do.
That's right. By the way, and on the point of stealing, we should just mention that the connector is actually up on GitHub. It's all open sourced. So yeah, please go steal. Nice.
What's the license? Do you know off the top of your head?
It's Apache.
Awesome. Okay. Well, that's wonderful. So, you know, it's not stealing if you have given it away.
I guess that's right. Yeah. My father always said it tastes better when you steal it as he was taking my food. So I like to, you know, go ahead and steal it. It'll taste better. But we've really given it away.
He is, as it turns out, not the first person to have said that. Reminds me of the Apple Store buy the item on the app thing. Of course, this is all notional right now because that's not a retail function that is available at the time of this recording. But, you know, you can on the Apple Store app walk in and like, buy, a cable or something like that, just by scanning it, paying for it with Apple Pay and walking out, not having spoken to any human being, feels like stealing. So it's like all of the naughtiness without the actual unethical behavior.
Maybe they sell more because it feels good to just take stuff. I don't know.
I didn't talk to anybody. I just walked out with my pocket. I absolutely paid for it. I didn't steal property. It's a bad thing. But yeah, so if somehow cloning the repo makes you feel that way, it shouldn't. But hey, good. That's good to know that that's a
absolutely
code up there.
And send us pull requests. You know, if you've got items that you would like in there and are willing to contribute, we're happy to take those too.
Nice. Talk to us about some and actually, let me not let that comment go too easily. That's amazing. That's great that you guys are open to that. So please, yes, if you're using this. And you want to change something, drop a PR. We like that.
For what it's worth, this is our standard pattern with our connectors and our drivers for the most part. Not all of them, but most of them are actually up in GitHub and available. And yeah, this is our common pattern.
Tell us about some of the more interesting pipelines you've seen. Again, one of the struggles here is that conceptually it's so simple. There's topics and there are things, and then I want to do analysis on them in an ad hoc performant way in the cloud. And so I use the Snowflake connector and I get it into Snowflake. What are some of the more interesting use cases that you're able to talk about that you've seen?
Well, I'll just say the most general pattern we see, which I think is a very powerful one, is that we'll have customers who run whatever events, and it's event. I'm using events here to be quite broad, right? These could be click logs, or you know, IoT device events, or you know, really almost anything. So much of our data is these kinds of these events, and you know, Kafka is a great tool for flowing those around. So we have customers that will drop those, and then they want to do some sort of post processing on them in Snowflake. So we've got a very nice link with two features in Snowflake that work well together. So sort of three features that work well together is Kafka ingestion and then streams and tasks. And so streams are our way in Snowflake to capture, you should think of it as a CDC, right? It's a way to capture diffs on a table and then act on them. And then tasks are a way to schedule that. So what we have is a lot of customers that will take some sort of event data, flow it into a table, and we ingest it as what we call a variant. It's just sort of, we represent the structure that's in that Kafka data. But then they want to, for example, do something simple like flatten that out into a table. And so you use streams to capture the diffs and then put a task that may run every minute or every 5 minutes, whatever your latency requirements are, to pull that data and parse that out and spray that into a table. So that's a very common pattern that we see people using over and over. In terms of the most interesting things, I think the hardest, maybe I would say the hardest ones for us to deal with are, we have some customers that are really using Kafka as a medium for doing sort of database replication. And I'm not sure we have a great solution for this when the number of tables that people are replicating get very large. So they'll do things like you have a database with 20,000 tables and figure out a way to shove it through a Kafka pipeline. And those are challenging. I'm not sure. I'm not sure we've got a great recommendation of how to deal with those today. If you've got a few of these that are flowing, it's pretty easy to deal with. But those are challenging.
What makes that a challenge? The large number of tables. But where in that does it?
Yeah. So how do you do this? You either have to run each table, for example, in its own topic, which will work, but you end up with an awful lot of topics. And Kafka, I think, has a hard time dealing when the number of topics gets too large, or the number of partitioning gets too large. There's some fixed overhead in Kafka for dealing with that. And so what users tend to do in these kinds of situations is they multiplex them into a single topic. So I've now got to demux them on the other side, and that demuxing is a challenge.
Gotcha. You'd need some sort of correlation identifier to indicate the source topic.
Yeah, and they all have different schemas, and how do I write the code to deal with this? It's not an easy task.
Is there anything in the connector, like this would be a single message transform sort of thing, but does the connector have any features or SMTs or anything like that have grown up around it to help accommodate some of those interesting corner cases?
Yeah, so SMTs, I'm not sure how SMTs would really help too much here, because you still on our side end up with single.
You still have a single, right? It would help on the input.
Yeah, you've got to parse that. Yeah, it might help on the input. We actually don't support SMTs in the connector right now, and we're working to try and get those in anyway. So
excellent. So that's request, welcome, that's a bit folks.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's in flight actually. So we're working actually with the Kafka folks to try and get that online. But it's a tricky problem, right? The system didn't really grow up around this use case. So it's sort of stretching it a bit, and it's uncomfortable.
Right. And I guess a word of precision on the partition thing. Current versions of Kafka, you should build it. It's a it's a number of partitions per broker. You should be able to get about 20,000 partitions per broker. So if you had 20,000 topics and they all had to be 100 partition topics, for example, I mean, that's unlikely. Those would be really big topics. That's just a super big cluster, right? That's like 100 or 200 node cluster.
That's right.
And that can be fielded.
You might be surprised, as a lot of real data warehouses have many tens of thousands of tables. I've seen data warehouses that have in the hundreds of thousands of tables. And so it's sort of shockingly large. Right. Most of those are fairly quiescent, right? They're lookup tables of various sorts.
Sure.
But some of them are going to be very active.
As long as those tables are named with a 6-character naming scheme with abbreviations, then that should be okay, right?
Of course.
Yes, we would hope.
Yes.
Only the most humanizing schemas that respect the dignity of the developer who will be using them. That's our goal here. Yeah, sure. No, so for that end of the spectrum, that's a lot. That's still, you still totally do that depending on, you know, the number of partitions. Like you said, for a lot of those being probably small reference data E-type things, you can make that happen.
Right.
But I still see that integration problem as an interesting one if you're muxing them into one topic.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Like I said, that's an outlier. Most of our customers are flowing, you know, it's weblogs or it's, yeah, like I said, sensor data that they're flowing in. And these work really well. So I think we're dwelling on maybe an outlier, although it's one that's come up a few times that's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the outliers are fun because they illustrate where the costs are in the system and, you know, where the kind of growth edges of the technology are going to be. Because if they're hard well, then that's the thing that you need to build next.
Yeah. They're also the ones, of course, that we hear about at some level the most, because it's when customers pipe up and scream.
Well, that's the thing. We should do an episode on the psychology of being a product manager at some point. It's not going to be this episode, but it's one of those jobs where no matter what, every decision you make is wrong to like a significant minority or plurality of your constituency. So yes, you hear about these things because you're a PM.
That's right. And you know, this is one that we've heard about a few times, but it's also one that we've not terribly prioritized because, like I said, you know, the typical use cases are the ones that we don't hear about. And those actually seem to be working pretty well.
Nice. On that point, where does the connector go in the future? Or a little more broadly, what are you excited about that you see in the future of Kafka Snowflake integration and deployments? And what do you want to see happen there?
Well, I'll say the most immediate thing is we're working hard to get the connector up in the Confluent Cloud, and I think that that actually should be going live relatively soon. So that's something we've heard from a number of customers that you know, they're using Confluent Cloud and they want the connector. So yeah, that's maybe the baby step. Longer term, I think the biggest sort of let's say the largest request that we have is for writing to streams as well, or writing to Kafka topics rather. So, you know, right today, this is entirely what Connect would call a sync, right? You run your data from Kafka into Snowflake, but as we talk about being a real data platform and people are building more of their apps on Snowflake, they want to do things like monitor what's going on. We talked about this notion of streams. So a stream I can run on any table and capture changes, and I might want to flow those back out into a Kafka topic so that I can pipe them to some other application and deal with them there. So that's a pretty common request, is how do we write out? And so from the Connect perspective, how do we become a good source?
I love that. And that reflects, I think, a certain maturity of the architectures that are participating in this Kafka Snowflake integration, because I have events and I need to get them somewhere so I can do valuable things with them is Kafka thinking of a few years ago. I have events and events are central to my thinking about my system, and those events need to be in Kafka topics and they need to be in other places that are better at doing certain kinds of things with them, like say analytics. So they need to be in Snowflake. But then the results of those analytics, well, dang it, they need to be back in Kafka topics because there's some other microservice that needs to consume them. And so I like that desire for source connector.
Yeah, that's spot on. If you view Snowflake as sort of a dead end, and not a dead end in that you're not going to use it, but you know that I'm going to land my data there, and then I have consumers that you know come in through Tableau or something like that. But it's really, in some sense, it's a dead end for your data. Then a sync connector is all you need. But Snowflake is not usually a dead end. People are going to run analytics. They are going to take the results of that and want to do something with it in a programmatic way. And so how do I then do that? And yeah, if you're a customer that has invested in Kafka, probably a key way that you want to do that is by running things back out through Kafka.
That's such a great point. When I said that, and I'm thinking about the architecture, I'm thinking, well, gee, good, that's a more mature use of Kafka, but really is a more mature use of Snowflake too, if it's in the loop, if there's more computation that happens after it adds its value and it's not just a dashboard.
That's right.
My guest today has been Isaac Kunin. Isaac, thanks for being a part of Streaming Audio.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
And there you have it. I hope this podcast was helpful to you. If you want to discuss it or ask a question, you can always reach out to me at TL Berglund on Twitter. That's at TLBERGLUND. Or you can leave a comment on a YouTube video or reach out in community Slack. There's a Slack sign-up link in the show notes if you want to register there. And while you're at it, please subscribe to our YouTube channel and to this podcast wherever fine podcasts are sold. And if you subscribe through iTunes, be sure to leave us a review there. That helps other people discover the podcast, which we think is a good thing. So, thanks for your support, and we'll see you next time.